Many of you probably know me. Some of you just know me by faith. I'm sure probably most of you actually don't know about my new venture, which is what I'm going to present to you today. It's a business model that I've developed based on principles of social business, or what is commonly referred to as social entrepreneurism. So my name is Jacqueline McAdam. I've been attending this church, as was previously mentioned, for about 13 years. I have to say, though, I have yet to stand up there and introduce myself as a new member. So I'm pretty proud of myself to be standing here. I was drawn to this church because of my overseas experience. I've lived in Africa for about 9 years of my life, and every time I were to return to Canada, I would feel a lack of some kind of spiritual or religious presence in this culture. When I lived in Africa, as many of you may be aware, there's a strong religious and spiritual basis to many of the cultural orientations of the countries in Africa. So I joined the church, I believe in 97, following my return from Rwanda, which I'll tell you more about. So partly the church allows me to embrace the many diverse areas of spirituality and religion that I've been exposed to in my life. So the part of myself that I'm really going to talk about today is my social justice, sort of social entrepreneur self. It's hard to know where that part of oneself starts, and it's always been interesting to me to correlate it potentially back to the fact that my brother and I were the first children to do CUSO in 1967 to 1969. My mother, being bored in Toronto, was watching The Friendly Giant with her children, and an advertisement for CUSO came on. That was in May. My father walked in the door and she said, "I want to go to West Africa." And in September, we were gone. I find this interesting because upon our return to Vancouver, my parents separated, and in 1971, I acquired 4 step-siblings. Both my brother and I are very involved in international development, and none of my step-siblings have this desire. So I have to believe that exposing children to diversity at a young age is really important. And this business actually has developed out of the fact that a month ago I took my 2 kids and my mom to Kenya and Ethiopia as a way of starting this business. So purposeful travel, is what I call it, has been a part of my life. And in 1990, I volunteered with Canadian Crossroads. Prior to leaving for Kenya, which was my placement for Canadian Crossroads, I met a woman named Wanjiko Koronyo through a number of different circumstances. Many of you may know Wanjiko, because this church actually sponsored Wanjiko to come to Canada in 1998 in cooperation with Anne Mortefi to do a benefit concert. So while in Kenya in 1990, I volunteered with Wanjiko's organization. That summer, I got accepted to do my master's at the University of Victoria within the School of Child and Youth Care, which is where my roots lie. I said to Wanjiko, "What are the needs here? I want to come back." At that time, my brother had been accepted to do his master's and gotten a scholarship to do his work in Indonesia, but he was a scientist and I was a social scientist, and I was sure that I would never get the kind of money that my brother got, because soft sciences often don't get the same funding. I returned to Canada in 1991 and started my MA. 6 weeks into the program, I nearly dropped out. I couldn't understand how sitting around with a group of 18 people discussing deconstruction theory and postmodernism was really going to relate to anything that I wanted to do in the world. I'd been working in the slums of Nairobi, primarily with youth and with the women's cooperatives that Wanjiko had helped to start, and I just couldn't see the link. How was this going to impact the people in Kenya? How is this going to make any kind of social impact? How is me sitting there doing a dissertation that potentially would sit in the library of UVic going to really impact anybody else? And because social justice and my strong social self was a huge part of me, I remember thinking, I'm just going to drop out and I'm going to go back to Nairobi and I'm going to work in those slums and feel like I'm making some kind of a difference. So it was from this place and a number of really great professors that I had through my master's that I discovered participatory research and community-based research. And through a bit of soul searching and a number of long showers where I do most of my creative work, I designed a model that would benefit more people than myself. I got full funding from CETA through the Canadian Bureau of International Education to go back to Kenya and work with Wanjiko's project and develop a program for street kids. And in the early 90s, the area of street kids was just opening up. And the other area that was opening up was the area of building on the informal economy. So the model I developed was a model that I'd actually used with street children here in Victoria. But I changed the model. Instead of looking at the objective being trying to keep kids from dropping out of high school and put them through the summer program so that when they look at working gas stations, they say, oh, I never want to do this for the rest of my life, and of course I'm going to return to high school. That doesn't really work in Kenya because a lot of kids don't even get the opportunity to go to high school. So what I did is I took the model and I said, we're going to provide an alternative form of education for what I refer to as marginalized youth. I use the term marginalized youth because the term street kids to me creates stereotypes that actually don't correlate to most of the kids on the street in Nairobi. So I went back and I ran that program in 1993 as part of my MA. I worked in partnership with Wanjiko and in partnership with her project. We put 18 young people through this project, and again, it built on the informal economy. So all our placements for the young people were within what was referred to as the informal economy, which has really evolved in looking into the entrepreneur economy in many developing countries. So my place of privilege, being true to myself, benefited many more people than myself. Upon leaving Kenya in 1991 and 1993, I used to bring back jewelry. I used to love walking through markets. I love African markets. And I love walking through, and I love the hustle and bustle. Many people can't stand it. I have to add that. I would bring friends through, and they'd say, oh, Jacqueline, you like this, all this bartering? Oh, how can you stand this? Anyway, I got to know lots of people in the market in Nairobi and used to bring back jewelry. And I used to sell it as a way of raising money for the young people in the project that I was working in. That was sort of when the seed was planted. The seed was planted for my business in about 1993. But I went off and I did a number of other things. I worked in Rwanda for a number of years as a consultant for the UN and a number of other non-government organizations. My primary area is children in extreme adversity. My PhD looked at examining and coping and adaptation for children in 9 different war zones in Africa. And that has evolved into my consultancy practice, which is called Resilient Solutions. And I do coaching, counseling, research-based. And really, my consultancy practice has informed the development of my import business. So, for those of you that are interested at all into my PhD work or the other work that I do, you're more than welcome to ask me about it after. But really today, I want to focus on my business model for Hakuna Matata and how it's defined in the context of social entrepreneurism, and how that also correlates with principles of Unitarianism. So, first of all, let's examine the word entrepreneurism, because it came before social entrepreneurism. So, the act of being an entrepreneur is undertaking a business, usually innovative, for financial gain. So, that goes way back. Lemonade stands are an entrepreneur business. Children buy, they sell at a profit, they're little budding entrepreneurs. Any of you remember the whole Pet Rock? Yeah, that's a form of entrepreneurism. Pretty creative. So lots of forms of entrepreneurism are creative, but lots of them sort of build on another idea that is already out there. So recently, the one that I think about is that my child is into is the creation of duct tape wallets. Another form of entrepreneurism. If any of you are interested in it, there's great YouTube videos on how to make duct tape wallets. So, more in line with Unitarian is social entrepreneurism, and in which my business is defined. So, I've actually drawn from two books on social entrepreneurism. One is by David Bernstein and Susan Davis, and it's called Social Entrepreneurism, What Everyone Needs to Know. Social entrepreneurism is a process by which citizens build or transform institutions to advance solutions to social problems, such as poverty, illness, illiteracy, environmental destruction, human rights abuse, and corruption, in order to make life better for many. A man named Greg Dees is often defined as the father of social entrepreneurship, as he took this idea and inserted it into the more traditional business models, starting at Harvard and later working at Stanford. So I just mentioned these names for anybody that would like to build on this interest, and those people are sort of some of the key thinkers in the area. The movement is relatively new. Although there were visionaries before, the idea of social entrepreneurship is quite new, really originating in the late 90s. My model, as I said, originated in the early 90s when I was working in Nairobi, but I had no context for it, and as I was sort of academically inclined, I went on to do other things. And really what my model looked at before I could really conceptualize it in a theoretical model, which again was informed by academic teaching, it really looked at buying from a middle economy, which is not the top-level economy, because it's the informal economy in this country, and then donating the profits from that to a level of economy that hadn't actually entered that informal economy yet. And my model still builds on that. But I've added to it over the years based on my academic experience. So I just thought we'd look at some of the Unitarian principles. I went onto the website, and one of the principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Social entrepreneurship, unlike the traditional business model, is interested in the inherent worth and dignity of those it works with from the start. It is not an afterthought. It's embedded in the organizational principles. So, for instance, most of you have heard of the Bill and Linda Gates Foundation. They do an amazing amount of work globally. They give a lot of money to different organizations to help the poorest of the poor. The difference between social entrepreneurship and what they do is it wasn't embedded in their original values within the organization. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, another Unitarian principle. These can be defined by Greg Dees, who states, social entrepreneurism does the same for social change, creating new combinations of people and resources that significantly improve society's capacity to address problems. Social entrepreneurs, he explains, create public values, pursue new opportunities, innovate and adapt, act boldly, leverage resources they don't control, and exhibit a strong sense of accountability. So there's an underlying integrity to those that would be defined as social entrepreneurs. So, another Unitarian principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregation. Many well-known entrepreneurs support this. As Bornstein notes, David Bornstein, social entrepreneurs have always existed, but in the past they were called visionaries, or humanists, or philanthropists, reformers, saints, or simply great leaders. Many of you, of course, are aware of Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and the other one that I've put in is Eglantyne Jebb. Many of you probably are not familiar with her, but she actually was the founder of Save the Children, and she put forth and is really the key person that helped shape the Convention on the Rights of the Child. So all these people, they had strong ideas about things, but it also created system change. And that's what it's about, a systems change. It's not just about one person having an idea. It's about inserting that idea into a system that will benefit many, many more people. Another Unitarian principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Social entrepreneurs are innovative. They're seeking innovative models that create meaning and truth for many more people. Another Unitarian principle, the right of consciousness and the use of the democratic process within our congregation and in society at large. Social entrepreneurs increase the consciousness of those they work with, and in turn they affirm the last two covenants of the Unitarianism, a goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So again, I just wanted to make the link, because I think there's lots of value base to social entrepreneurs that correlate to us as Unitarians, and me as a Unitarianism. So in Bornstein's book, How to Change the World, Social Entrepreneurs and the Power of New Ideas, he expands on the work of a man named Bill Dayton. Bill Dayton established an organization where he basically started a foundation where he was going to fund people with innovative ideas. His work is very interesting, because basically what he did was he went around the world and interviewed a whole bunch of people and said, look at all these people with great ideas, but they don't have the money necessarily to start their great ideas. And so I have the book here and you can look at it after. The book is basically an account of the various organizations that he funded and the impact that they have made. One of them is a really interesting story about a woman who decided to bring environmental education or wanted to change the curriculum in India to have it include environmental education. But she didn't have the financial means to do that. She basically had to leave her job in order to do that. So Bill Dayton funded her, and her curriculum is now in many, many schools in India. So one of the things that is talked about is one of the principles of people that are successful social entrepreneurs. And I just thought I'd share those with you today. And then I'm going to go into talking about my model in more depth. So those that are successful entrepreneurs have a willingness to self-correct. So in short, they're open to feedback. Interestingly enough, many traditional models have actually failed because they haven't been open to feedback. They have not changed their paradigm. They get stuck in a certain paradigm and they stay there, and their product is not successful because other businesses come in and they are stuck in that. So social entrepreneurism is a more dynamic process, and it is naturally open to feedback from other people. So a willingness to share credit. My experience has been those that are attracted to social entrepreneurship are also attracted to more community-based or participatory types of process. So the idea of grandizing themselves at the expense of the other people that have helped them out is unusual within this sector. It's more participatory, it validates the other people, it draws on that whole idea that it takes a village. So a willingness to break free from established structure. As I said, it's creative. So there are many ideas that go into traditional business models. Social entrepreneurs take those ideas and say, how do I expand them? How do I tweak them and change them, again, to help many more people? A willingness to cross disciplinary boundaries. Those that are in the world of entrepreneurship have come from business. They've come from the social sciences. They've come from education. It attracts a whole lot of people. I would say the commonality between them is a strong sense of social justice. A willingness to work quietly. There's a quiet determination, an innate drive that I say supersedes a claim to fame. And I'm reminded of many people. The one person that came to mind when I was thinking about this is a man named Viktor Frankl. If any of you are familiar with Viktor Frankl, he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And he actually had the manuscript written prior to entering a concentration camp where the manuscript was destroyed. It took him years to actually write it, but his strong determination upon his release from the concentration camp resulted in him writing it. He's a very well-known psychologist, and he coined the theory of optimism, or logotherapy is his therapy. So strong ethical base. People that are attracted to be social entrepreneurs as I mentioned before, have an innate desire to make a difference. So, in saying that, although I'm drawn to business, and there's many parts of business that I like in terms of having two master's degrees that sort of more have a business or organizational component to them, I'm not drawn to the traditional capitalistic-based business model. So my business, as I said, is formed as a business. It's not formed as a nonprofit. And the reason I didn't form it as a nonprofit is nonprofits take a bit of time. They also create a lot of organization that I didn't feel I had the resources to do or the time to do. So it is a business model, but it's a socially based, as I said, social entrepreneur's business model. So within those frameworks, there are various levels of philanthropy. So for instance, I buy from local merchants in Kenya. I look at how to build those capacities, to build the capacities with local merchants in Kenya. So rather than a traditional business model where you want to get the best wholesale price, and if the wholesale goes under, you just buy from another wholesaler. Because you're not really concerned with the human capital within your business model. Now I know that sounds brash, but sometimes it's a reality. My business model is different. I want to make sure that the people that I'm working with are going to equally going to succeed. I want to have relationships with them. I want to have relationships of authenticity with them. What we found when we ran the model in Kenya in 1993 was that the employers that we worked with, we would go and visit the youth on a weekly basis and talk to the employers about how the young people were doing. The employers were starved for information. They were starved for information on how to make their businesses better, how to create relationships with their employees, how to create structures with their employees that their employees stayed around and didn't have high turnover. So the informal sector is people that have come up, they've got an entrepreneur spirit, but unlike here in Canada, they don't necessarily have a chambers of commerce that they can go and network with other people and learn new skills. So that is part of what I do with the people that I buy from. I want to talk to them about what they're doing and how we can help support them doing it better. And if it means creating bigger markets for them, helping them connect with other people so that their product can be sold in many more places, that's part of what I do. And then, as I said, what we do is we donate, I donate a portion of what's made through the business to Wanjiko's project, which is called the Maji Missouri Center. The Maji Missouri Center has many different projects. It has a center for children with disabilities. It has women's cooperatives. They've just started a number of schools. What's the other? I'm missing something. They have a microfinance for adults, and they are also have a youth component. I can't do everything. So I am focusing on the youth component mostly because that's where my experience lies. And I believe that I can contribute the most. So this year, as I said, we were just in Kenya. My son is out there with all my wares, manning the table. I was there with my kids and my mom. And this year, as with any startup business, you use a lot of your own money to start the business up. So knowing that, I have given skill back this year. Although a portion of everything I make goes back to Kenya, I also realized that it's really important to start from a base where everybody is saying the same thing. So this year what I'm doing is I'm doing an evaluation. So again, when I get paid to do evaluation, it's roughly $8,000 to $10,000. So I'm giving back skill this year primarily. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want to make sure that the money that we raise is useful. And it's not just being handed over as a way of saying, we've given money to this great organization, and then what we find out is that it's not managed properly, or it really has been used for something that really isn't sustainable. So we have three different organizations that are involved in the youth project. We have the Maji Missouri Center. We have a foundation that was started by a young woman who has been involved in the project for years. I met her first when she was 16, and I re-met her again. When I was recently in Nairobi, and her organization is based in Holland. So there's three of us that are really looking at supporting the youth component. And so we all need to be on board. And so the purpose of doing an evaluation first is to say, how do we move forward in a way that makes sense to everybody and is going to have the most impact. So again, as I said, it's multi-level. We support the informal sector, we support the youth, and yes, I do get paid a portion through this business, but as with any socially based business, I basically have a set salary. This year it's not going to be anything, but ideally it would be a $30,000 business, so that anything over and above that, once the business got going, would go right back to Kenya. Unlike a traditional business model where if the business is doing well, I'm doing way better. That's not what this business model works like. And how will the accountability be maintained? It will be maintained through annual reports at the end of the year, where you can see how the money's coming in and how it's being distributed. Because I believe most good organizations have mechanisms of accountability. So, I don't know if I've gone over time or how much time I had, but I just want to thank you all for being here. I'm going to be out there at the back and show you some of the things that I sell and talk in more detail about what I do sell and where I buy it from. Right now I'm buying from Kenya and Ethiopia. I just actually want to add a bit of that though. The places that I buy from Ethiopia, one is an amazing project, and you can read about it on my website because I do an educational blog. And it's an amazing project that a friend of mine started 10 years ago, and it was to build on the silk industry that exists in Ethiopia. She'd worked in development for a long time, and like me, felt that the whole impact of development wasn't as great as it could be. So she actually started a silk weaving business, and she now employs 100 people. I don't have any of her silk scarves yet, but I will, mostly because we had to get them here, and so they're on the way. The other thing I have is some leather. You'll see them in some leather bags there. That, coincidentally enough, was a project that another friend of mine started that worked for a long time with Save the Children Sweden. And when I was recently back there, she said, "Oh, I'm the same as you. I'm so frustrated with this, you know, having to get charities and handing out and being able to get money for things." She says, "I've decided to start this leather project to support this home that I have for women that have been abused." She's a social psychologist, so she counsels the women, but she needs to support their ability to live there. So I said to her, "That's perfect. It totally fits with my business model. It's a socially based business. Let me look at marketing your leather in through my business." So you can see those out there too. So I just wanted to give you a little snippet of the Ethiopia aspect of this project, because I know I primarily talked about Kenya. So thank you very much, and I look forward to talking to you after the service.